All right, welcome to our first 2022 episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, and the ones and twos. The crew is back together. Our special guest today is brand new Cincinnati mayor, Aftab Purival. And Sherry, you're all smiles. You had a nice holiday break. And it's right into the frying pan with a brand new mayor and council. But first of all, though, how are you?
I feel like I haven't seen you in a thousand years. It's been a while. A thousand years. I had a very restful break. It was much needed after 2 years of covering a lot of chaos at City Hall. And so I'm rested and I'm ready to go. But you know what? It seems like the perfect time because we had a, you know, someone yesterday, I think it was Victoria Parks, but
new council member
at the swearing in yesterday said we're at a crossroads. And that did, even though I can't really remember who said it, that did resonate with me because we really are. It's a change period. And what's going to happen next?
And that was going to be my question to you is with a brand new council, only Greg Landsman is the only person who was previously elected to council is back. And that's including the mayor and the council. And to point out, too, and I keep saying this because I think it's an important point. Greg Landsman is the only person who's ever been elected to any office previously, any office. That doesn't matter what the office is. And so you have 8 brand new council members who are completely new to elected office. Jan Michelle Lemon-Kearney, Liz Keating obviously have been appointed in the past year to fill seats. But people are asking me, and I know they're asking you this, Sherry, what should people expect from this new mayor and council?
I think that really is the big question because the campaign is different than reality. It's hard to argue with anything that they were saying on the campaign trail, that there needs to be more affordable housing. There needs to be more equity in the city's 52 neighborhoods there and those kind of things that they were talking about and, you know, new ideas in policing. But what they're coming into today, and I've already been on the phone with the fire union president, we're under a state of emergency because we do not have enough firefighters, period. On top of that, COVID is raging through the fire department. This is as we've heard the scientists say, it's very transmissible. Mm-hmm. They live together. That's right.
Yep.
And so nobody wants to see a brownout. So we have the state of emergency is less about the idea that they're not there doing their jobs, but to pay them overtime because it's very expensive. And that kind of allows just the overtime spigot to turn on. And it's very needed. I'm not saying anything against that because these firefighters are already tired from increased runs due to COVID. When I interviewed new Fire Chief Washington last summer, I heard him tell I spent a day with him and I went to firehouses with him and I heard him tell them, I know you're tired. Relief is coming. That was like 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And so that's the place we are. So here we are in reality. No one is arguing with those campaign promises, but they're coming into this fire department. They're coming into a police department where I hope we did talk a little bit on the podcast, the last podcast we did together about the youth violence in this city. Yep. Just because there's a new administration doesn't mean the neighborhoods are feeling any less like there's needs there. Safety needs that they're clamoring for. And it's not necessarily like, oh, I need a police officer to be in my neighborhood. They need better lighting. They need better streets. They need the kind of things that are going to make things safer. And so it's reality. I wrote about litter. That has not gone away. I cannot even believe the litter at the bottom of Queen City Avenue. Yeah. I almost stopped my car and started cleaning. It was like trash bags had been completely strewn at the bottom of that MSD ratepayers built a beautiful new Lick Run Park down there with fencing. It is supposed to be a walkable, lovely area to help revitalize North and South Fairmount. At the bottom there, it's covered in trash. Mm. It's covered in trash. And so these are kind of like the realities of what they're actually facing, but only time is going to tell of what their priorities will be.
Yeah, it would have been nice if the previous administration and council had addressed that, but Yeah, they had other priorities. So we're moving on from that. That's in the past. We're looking forward. And
there was a feeling of hope yesterday. I do want to say that the swearing in had been moved outside to Washington Park, and it felt very accessible to the public. There was a feeling of hope and excitement in the air. I really was just sitting there. My fingers were frozen. but thinking about Washington Park and at the time what Washington Park used to be like, mm-hmm. and the good changes that had happened there. And here we are with this change around us sitting in Washington Park and how many things that it is used for. And I did think, is there going to be more of this?
More? Are you saying you wonder if there's going to be more redevelopment? Is that what you're saying?
No, just the positivity of like, and seeing some of these changes.
Yeah, this is great stuff. And what you just said there, you said all serious things, and I hope what you just said there are the things that this new council and mayor address, and that we don't get down the road of ideological things that, you know, streetcar, and I'm not bringing that up. I'm just using that as an example, like things that aren't important to the greater good. I mean, maybe they're important to a small group of people. Maybe they're important to a specific politician. But what I'm talking about is the importance, the priorities for the greater good, safety, jobs, litter, you know, fire brownouts, police department. That's what needs to be addressed here.
Agree. There was a lot of chatter. Our county reporter.
Our new police chief coming up.
A new police chief. Yep. An RFP has been put out for the search firm. But, you know, I was thinking about writing about that. The search firm is going to pick a police chief. It's not a surprise that a search firm is going to do it. That's kind of standard practice. I didn't see anything really in that contract other than the fact that it's less public record. But certainly, I think the city's going to be very transparent about the lists they create, and I'm not even worried about that. And we'll see all of those names and really get to vet those lists as a public and the citizenry, too. So that process has started a little bit there, and that is a big decision. Technically, it's supposed to be made by the city manager, which at the point will be chosen by the interim city manager, who looks to be John Kerp, the former city solicitor. It was a shocking amount of news that happened in December.
Yeah, the last week of December.
Yes.
I read a story in The Atlantic called Dead Week, where nothing usually happens, but certainly it happened a lot in city politics in Cincinnati.
So I did get distracted, and I do feel like I'm rambling a little bit here, but there is a lot going on. That Scott Wortman wrote a story that the city has some pickleball courts, $500,000, and there was some criticism I saw on social media of that. But there can be a balance, right? Like, I don't know about you, but everyone I know plays pickleball except me.
Except me.
So, you know, I don't mind.
I'm itching to pick it up.
Are you?
I am, yeah.
Intriguing.
I was at my parents' house in South Carolina, and they live in one of those retirement communities, and everyone plays pickleball.
So, for health and people's health.
And our boss, Carl, is a big pickleball guy.
That's true. But I just know, like, regular friends of mine who are like, you should come play pickleball. And I'm like, I work all the time. But people work, you know, so I don't mind, like, having – and that was also the number one thing on, like, when people are like, how should we spend the CARES Act money? Pickleball courts. I was like, that's not really what they meant about that.
That's right.
In that survey. But so there's a lot of balancing that has to be done, because you do want things like that, but you also have to take care of your fire and, you know, your safety forces.
But I think in the bigger picture, that's a good example of the squeaky wheel gets the oil, where people got together and they lobbied hard and they got in some politicians' ears and they were aggressive and they stayed on it. And voila, they get $500,000 for a pickleball.
I do think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for this new council, is that certain people
saying no.
Less about saying no and more when they talk about equity and making things fair. There are neighborhoods who have so many problems that they don't advocate. They don't, you know, trot down to City Hall, go to public comment, advocate for themselves, because that's not what that neighborhood can do. They're at work all day. They have bigger problems than, you know, like people having free time to just go down to City Hall and squeak that wheel.
That's right.
And so the equity, they are still going to hear from the people who know how to do that and come in and say, my Hyde Park, Oakley, Pleasant Ridge neighborhood needs this.
Right.
And so they're going to hear that. And I'm not saying those things aren't needs, right? So, but they're going to hear those needs. But when you get to equity, you might not hear the needs. The needs
of North Fairmount or
Roll Hill. The needs. Right. The needs just exist.
Yeah, that's a great point. Trying to keep an open mind here.
You know what we should do? We should talk to the mayor about it.
We should. You know what? Let's do that. Let's bring over Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pirival. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome onto the podcast for the first time. Couldn't be a better time to do it. Just about 24 hours into him after being sworn in as the brand new mayor of the city of Cincinnati, the great city of Cincinnati. Pleased to welcome Aftab Pirival. Aftab, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited that this is my first time on the podcast. I'm a big podcast guy. My wife gets annoyed with me because I kind of walk through the house listening to podcasts. So I'm excited to now be a guest.
Besides that, So Cincinnati, because I mean, obviously.
Yes.
But what are your favorite podcasts?
I am really into sports podcasts and more pop culture podcasts. So I listen to the Tony Kornheiser podcast pretty religiously. I'm a little... those who listen will understand that reference. And then I don't get a lot of opportunities to watch TV shows or movies, but there's a podcast called The Rewatchables, and it's great because it reviews or rewatches movies from like the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s movies that I've seen in a kind of fun and funny way. So I sometimes zone out and listen to that podcast.
There is a podcast for everything.
That's right.
Hey, Aftab, wanted to ask you, as we speak here, you're 23 plus hours into after being sworn in. So what's your first day on the job been like? Tell us about it. Have you kind of just jumped right in, or has it been more just, kind of taking calls and saying hi to people?
No, we've jumped right in, and it really started with the transition. So we've been working hard pretty much every day to make sure that we hit the ground running. And that started with a professional and effective transition from Paula Boggs-Muthing to our interim city manager, John Kerb. That meeting, a special meeting of the Budget and Finance Committee, will be held today at 11. And it'll then be referred to council today at the first council meeting. I guess yesterday was the first one, but this is the first real one, quote unquote, for an up or down vote for both Paula Boggs-Muthing severance package and also John Kerb's engagement. And so a lot of work went into making sure that process was drama free, that it was professional and effective. And I have to give Paula Boggs-Muthing and John Kerb both incredible accolades for the way that they've both been very supportive, very professional, and very effective in making sure that we have this kind of professional transition. You know, the other big thing, though, that continues to challenge our community, and I've already had several meetings on it this morning and over the last, week, and that is COVID and the Omicron variants. In consultation with the health commissioner, Dr. Moore, and the health board, we made the decision out of an abundance of caution to move the swearing in with 48 hours notice outside, which was a Herculean effort by our public services and public servants in City Hall to get that done yesterday. And it really, they pulled it off without any issues and my gratitude and admiration certainly goes to them. But I'll be meeting daily with the health commissioner and various other leaders to continue to monitor the situation and take action when necessary. So I've had some meetings on those issues, and obviously today is a big day because of the special budget and finance committee meeting and also the full council meeting. So yeah, it's a busy time. That's
so,
for sure.
So yesterday you did have a Q&A after the swearing in. I don't know if you expected like a whole bunch of tough questions. I thought we were just going to talk about the swearing in, but we all really did jump right into it. And we asked you about an indoor mask mandate because a top official at the health department did tell WVXU that he felt like there should be an indoor mask mandate. So my question, I don't expect you to answer this question right now. I wish you would, but I don't expect you to. But here is my question. I walked away from that Q&A thinking this. Do you feel like you're going to be able to take the politics out of decisions like that? Like your first big decision here was really going to be looking at this. And even though we said, oh, it's the police chief and oh, it's John Kerr, but we're talking about about medical safety issues that are also political. How are you looking at that? And can you divorce the politics from a decision like this?
Yes. It's my goal and it's my role, frankly, in the city to make these kinds of tough decisions without political consideration. My priority in all of this is to make sure that we're keeping people safe, but also that we are making the best decisions possible for our small businesses and for our economy. It's my job to weigh those interests. Sometimes they're in line, sometimes they're competing, and make the best decision possible for the people of Cincinnati. As I said yesterday, I'll be continuing to monitor the situation. I'll be continuing to consult with our public health experts. We're really fortunate here in Cincinnati. We're one of the few municipalities that operate our own health clinics. And as a result, we've got a lot of experts in-house in the city. So consulting with them on a daily basis and assessing and reassessing the situation. I'll be meeting later today with Dr. Moore. And certainly I have no announcements right now and no intention of instituting any mandates, but that may very well change depending on the facts on the ground.
So do you also have an in-house medical advice since your wife, as we talked about this on the campaign, and I had a lovely conversation with her that I wrote after the election. I mean, she's Dr. Wittes. Yes, she's your wife, but she is also Dr. Wittes, and she works in a hospital and deals with COVID patients. How much do you talk to her about these things?
Yeah, I mean, my wife is a lot smarter than I am. And I trust her, without condition. And so she's very much an advisor, not just on this issue, but on a whole host of issues. It just so happens that she's an expert on this issue. And what she tells me is that by and large, the people who are in the hospital, who she is treating on a daily basis from COVID, the folks who are sick and dying, by and large, are those who are unvaccinated. And she tells me heartbreaking stories where people on really their deathbed are begging for the vaccine. And so it really drives home the fact that, masks aside, quite frankly, the best hope that you have to protect yourself and your family and the community to help us get past this pandemic is by getting vaccinated, by getting boosted, and taking that responsibility seriously. I can say that our healthcare professionals who have been battling this pandemic since day one, they're tired, they're burned out, and they're starting to have some compassion fatigue because there's only so many times you can plead with folks to tell them what the science is saying and get past all of the misinformation to have folks start taking this seriously and start taking their health seriously.
Might jump around a little bit here just on some different things.
I mean, honestly, it could be the COVID podcast. I mean, that is like, it's such a topic. I mean, we have so many stories like coming right now about that. But yes, Jason, go ahead.
We only have
so much time.
One of the things you said yesterday about your priorities, you used the phrase environmental justice. What does that mean?
Yeah, for me, it means that so many of the issues around our environment are having a disproportionate effect on our Black and Brown communities. You know, things is that a lot of us take for granted, like trees. If you take a look at a heat map of our city, you will see that, frankly, Black communities and working class impoverished communities are by and large a lot hotter than other communities because they lack trees. Black communities oftentimes have less access to good food, oftentimes have less access to good clean water, have dirtier air. And, you know, the infrastructure dollars that are hopefully coming into our city from this $1 trillion package from Washington, D.C., will certainly be, well, I'll put it this way. If this infrastructure package doesn't fix the Brent Spence Bridge, then nothing will. So hopefully the Brent Spence Bigs, Brent Spence Bridge continues to be a priority. And when I met at the White House with the president and the vice president and the cabinet, I made it very, very clear that that was our top priority. But hopefully that's not the only priority that Cincinnati gets from these dollars. And dealing with the environmental impact from some of the decisions in the past, like putting 75 and 71 through predominantly Black communities that were still dealing with those issues today, hopefully we can address some of these environmental infrastructure challenges as well through those dollars.
So I was telling Jason before the podcast that my holidays were kind of uneventful and I felt rested. But you met with the president. what was that? We haven't really heard. What was that like?
Yeah, what was it like?
And did he say anything in particular to you about the idea that you're the first Asian American mayor of Cincinnati? What was your conversation like with him like?
He didn't say anything in particular about that. He did compliment my hair, which was kind of weird. well, look, I've never been to the White House, much less the Oval Office. And so, you know, I'm sitting there with the mayor of Boston, of New York, of Atlanta, of Seattle. And I'm just trying to play it cool, guys. I'm just trying to be like, well, yeah, this is no big deal. We're in the Oval Office. You know, there's a picture of us in the Oval Office, and it looks like I'm kind of standing to the side. All the rest of the mayors are kind of huddled around Biden. But honestly, it's because I was completely in a daze, just kind of like looking at the ceiling, and I didn't notice that Biden had walked to the other side of the room. So it was a really, I'm not ashamed to say it was an awe-inspiring experience. But I was also there to do work. So I made it very, very clear to the Biden administration and specifically to the vice president, I personally challenged her to ensure that the Brent Spence Bridge is a priority and that it's not just lip service, because we've seen presidential candidate after presidential candidate do a press conference at the Brent Spence Bridge, and we're just tired of inaction. And it's having a big impact. Not just on us regionally and locally, but also nationally with the supply chain issues. So I made it very, very clear in all of my meetings that that was a top priority. But I also talked about the need for more affordable and greater access to broadband. I talked about the fact that we need to get the lead pipes out of our waterways. I talked about the MSD challenges that we have. So I am optimistic that we will not only get Brent Spence done, but we'll also get a lot of our local priorities funded as well.
Did she have a response for you? I ask this because the vice president came to Cincinnati and had a transportation roundtable, and she was specifically asked about the Brent Spence Bridge. And she just said tepid things like, well, it'll be among the projects and every state can, you know, pitch, you know, why they think their project's the most important. And I, in my head, what I thought was, you're coming to Cincinnati. That obviously was a question you were going to be asked. And it just, we didn't really get any sort of answers there. Did you get an answer?
I didn't get any more definitive answers either. But what I can say is it is very clear to the Biden administration how important this project is. And I worked very hard to not just talk about it as a local project, but talk about it as a national project for our interstate commerce to drive home the fact that some of these supply chain issues can be addressed by fixing our bridge. But what I can say is I was pleased to hear from the Biden administration how much they value input from local elected officials, specifically from mayors. If you look at President Biden's cabinet, it's filled with mayors. I mean, it is like lousy with mayors. You've got obviously Cabinet Secretary Buttigieg, Cabinet Secretary Fudge, Cabinet Secretary Marty Walsh, Mitch Landrieu, the former New Orleans mayor, is the infrastructure czar, and we had time with him. So I'm encouraged that he's listening to mayors, because mayors are really where the rubber hits the road. It's not about partisanship or politics. It's about driving results. And so I'm encouraged by that. I'm also encouraged by the priorities laid out by the Biden administration. The fact that they are focused on getting lead pipes out of our waterways. The fact that they are focused on broadband and on racial equity. And there's a lot of similarities between what myself and other council members have been talking about on the campaign trail that hopefully will make our city even more attractive for these dollars.
So I did want to ask you about, I was thinking about, a main theme we heard at the swearing-in yesterday was equity, and during the campaign too. So if you had to give your Webster's Dictionary version kind of explanation of equity, just kind of that quick, like, what does it mean to you? I am wondering what that is. We did see Dan Hills this morning post on Facebook talking about equity himself. And so I am wondering what it means to you.
Yeah, for me, you know, racial equity is really, I'm focused on ownership, Black ownership of homes, Black ownership of neighborhoods, and Black ownership of businesses. And the city, you know, has some incredible opportunities in order to focus in on that ownership and boost it. And I'll give you a few examples. A lot of the council members also talked about affordable housing. One specific way we can start addressing that and start changing the values of our city policies is by looking at our tax abatement process for residential homes. Right now, a vast majority of our tax breaks are concentrated in our wealthiest neighborhoods at the expense of communities like Bonds Hill and Price Hill and other communities that are looking to expand and grow, including location in that decision matrix, whether through the census tract or others, I think is an important way to drive more equity and create more ownership, specifically for homes.
Do you feel like it is 23 hours in, so I don't necessarily expect you to have an answer to this. But when I think about that, I didn't feel like there were big projects in those neighborhoods coming forward to City Hall and asking for tax abatements and to do big projects there. And City Hall was like, ooh, no, we're not doing that. Like, it's not like I feel like they were saying no to that. I feel like it wasn't coming in for those neighborhoods. I mean, who doesn't want to? Like, it was coming for Over the Rhine. It was coming for Oakley. And so how much does the city go out and try and get those projects for the equity?
Yeah, there's definitely a piece of this that is on the city to market these opportunities, to be intentional about getting private dollars. But we also have to think about the way that we're incentivizing that growth. And so in no way am I suggesting that communities outside of Price Hill or Bond Hill should not be incentivized, but they should be incentivized less. And if we have only a certain amount of incentives to provide, I think we should be providing more incentives for communities and neighborhoods that aren't necessarily organically attractive to private dollars. That's exactly the role of government, to incentivize growth in areas that are struggling.
Was your choice of Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney for the Planning Commission intentional for that reason? Because this is a huge issue for her, and she has been a leader in the time she has been on council with talking about more tax abatements for different neighborhoods. So was this part of your thinking there?
Absolutely. Completely intentional. Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney, our vice mayor, has been a leader on these equity issues, particularly as it relates to housing and development. And so she was a natural choice to be my first appointment to the Planning Commission. Sherry, because you're a veteran, so much of the work of City Hall gets done by these volunteer commissions and boards and committees. And so it's one thing for City Hall to set priorities, but they're actually executed a lot of times by these commissions. And the Planning Commission is incredibly powerful and has a lot of authority. So not only will I be talking about these things through executive action and also legislation, but my my appointments will also reflect those values.
You know, there's talk of, you know, and I've said it, you know, Sherry and I talked a little bit before we had you come on the podcast about, you know, a brand new mayor, brand new council. Only Greg Landsman had been previously elected to any office on the council. Is this going to be, do you think it's going to be a little bit of rough going here in the early stages as you try to, everybody's new and trying to figure this out? Or, you know, how do you see yourself and the new council kind of gelling here and kind of, you know, getting going? And because look, you know, like this is, there's a lot to this. And, you know, when you have all new people, I think that's pretty, it's a big challenge.
It is a challenge that, you know, there's no doubt, but I am more than confident that we are up to the task. And so I don't expect it to be, I think you said rough going. I think there's going to be opportunities for all of us to learn. I am being very intentional about telling people when I don't know something, when I need to learn something, and working hard to learn those things. But I have great faith in the new council. I've got great faith in my own staff. But more than anything, I've got a lot of admiration and faith in the professionals, the public servants, the 6,000 employees of the city who work every day to ensure that public safety, that public services, that basic services are running without any issues. And look, I think the voters had a very clear opportunity to vote for the status quo or vote for change, and they voted for change in a historic margin. So we have a very clear mandate, but we also have a very clear statement from the community as to what they're looking for. And I think we're already executing against that by bringing in John Kerp, by taking a fresh look at the administration and at the mayor's office, while also making sure that we respect the institutional knowledge of the place and ensure that nothing gets dropped.
Okay, so I did want to add, like, I want to try and get a sense of you too, because we do ask people about themselves, but we did that a lot on the campaign trail. What are your days going to look like? Are you a morning person? Like, what time do you think you're going to get to work? Like, what do your days, what do you anticipate your days looking like?
Yeah, so on, I am a morning person. On Thursdays and Fridays, my son goes to preschool, and my wife and I share those drop-off responsibilities. His preschool starts at 8 a.m. So on those days, I'll be in the car with Bodie, dropping him off to school, and then I'll go directly to City Hall. You know, I'm with a young family. It's important to me to try to maintain some kind of balance with my wife and my young son. But certainly this is, you know, this is my passion. This is my priority, and I'll be working pretty much constantly, between now and 4 years and hopefully 8 years from now.
Did you have any calls in the night on your first night?
I didn't, but today started very, very early, chatting with the health commissioner, chatting with Paula Boggs-Muthing, chatting with various council members about the vote. So yeah, we are off and running and working hard.
Have you, Dan Hills was reelected to as the FOP president recently, and I think you made it pretty clear in your campaign that you have a different approach on the police department than the previous mayor. Have you met with Dan yet? Have you talked to him? What is going to be your approach with the police?
I've met a couple times with Dan, actually. I met with him shortly after getting elected, and then I met with him more recently and congratulated him on his victory. You know, Dan and I, I'm optimistic we'll have a good working relationship. That's what we both committed to each other in our meetings. And, you know, a lot of things were said on the campaign trail. A lot of them weren't true. I don't support defunding the police. I think law enforcement needs the resources necessary.
I mean, respectfully, your the plan that you put on your website was all code for defund the police, and some of the materials you put out on your campaign trail were code for defund the police. So, what do you say to that?
So respectfully, that's not true. I've been very
respectfully.
Clear
it is true. Respectfully, it very much is true. That is a fact. You put that in writing in a campaign flyer, and you also put it on your website in writing. Okay. So the people can go read that stuff.
And I encourage like people I to read those plans because I do think they're a blueprint for City Hall going forward.
But I'm giving you the opportunity right here to say what do you say to all that?
Let's let him answer because this is going to be very important going forward, especially to a new police chief with people looking to apply here. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Cheryl. Did you change the question?
Nope.
What did you say?
No, the answer here
do
is
you
very,
support, do you support? The question is do you support defunding the police?
Absolutely not. I have said consistently throughout the campaign that I don't support defunding the police. There is nothing in my plan.
But you can say that, but then what you put in writing is contrary to that.
Let him answer.
No, I'm just...
You are making your point.
You're going to be asked tough questions as the mayor, and I'm asking it right now.
We have heard your point. And people can read this. Let him answer. Let him answer.
Yeah, in fact, it's not true. In my plan, there's an entire section there about leveraging federal resources in order to make sure that police officers have the resources necessary to do their job. And I was very encouraged that recently CPD got a grant from the federal government for millions of dollars in order to hire more police officers. Jason and Sherry, you guys know better than anyone, we're facing a real challenge in our public safety departments with a historic number of retirements as well as, you know, smaller and smaller numbers as it relates to recruitment. I think we've got to leverage federal dollars to have the resources necessary to hire the police. And we also have to, I think, invest in our public safety academy to boost those recruitment numbers. To get more people, particularly our public school students, knowledgeable and excited about a career in public safety. And it'll also give us an opportunity to engage with them at a young age about the best practices as it relates to problem-solving-oriented policing, because we've got to continue to invest in the collaborative agreement, which has been a national model for our community.
That's good. You bring up the collaborative. That was one thing I want to ask you about is, you know, I think the, you know, some, so we got away from some of the things in the collaborative in the last administration. Is it a big thing for you to come in here and really sort of revisit that and really lock in and funding really big pieces of that, of the collaborative agreement that, you know, kind of got pushed to the side in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm encouraged to see that the Citizen Complaint Authority has been prioritized and funded. Unfortunately, it's going to take a long time for the backlog to get cleared out. But some of the things in the collaborative agreement actually don't cost any money. And specifically, I'm talking about the MAG, reinvigorating the MAG and repurposing the MAG for its original purpose. Based on the collaborative agreement, will be very, very important.
The MAG is continuing to empower. For our listeners, the MAG is basically like a citizen committee, really, you know, coming to City Hall, dealing with the city manager and saying what's needed in the neighborhood. So like the MAG, I don't remember what those initials stand for, but those are initials, but that's what it really is.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay, right. I know.
That's right, the City Manager's Advisory Group. There are other, you know, I want our law enforcement techniques to be data driven, and areas where we're seeing success is a problem solving oriented technique called PIVOT, which is showing some really early signs of success through the data. And PIVOT is a police technique that takes a specific geographic area and tailors, unique, violence intervention strategies for that specific neighborhood and area. Guys, I've seen stats that suggest that a 1.5% geographic area of our city, just 1.5%, constitutes a majority of the violent crime in our city. So we know where these violent crimes are happening. And Pivot is a really good tool used by law enforcement to use data to interrupt that violence.
All right, let me ask, public safety. Let me ask you one more question about public safety, because I do think it's going to come up today. Do you think we so we see this emergency order about overtime in the fire department kind of due to COVID. A lot of the firefighters have COVID, and we needed to have, you know, some overtime to make sure the firehouses are fully staffed. But I think that we are really going to hear from the fire department in these early months here, talking about not their infrastructure needs, but also that they are short people. The one class is not going to solve things. Do you think we need another emergency fire recruit class?
Yeah, I've spoken with Matt Alter about this. He is very clear that the fire department's number one issue is not necessarily capital improvements. I mean, obviously those are important issues for them, but it's people. And it'll be our job as council, the city manager, and the mayor's office to ensure that we have the firefighters available to do the important job of keeping our community safe. So I've already sat down and met with him, and we'll continue to collaborate with him to find a solution.
How do you see yourself, you know, Cranley and certainly Charlie Lucan as well, some of your predecessors in the Strong Mayor era worked really closely with the business community. And where do you see your role and relationship with, you know, 4th Street, or, you know, working, you know, how you guys will work together? Yeah, what will be the dynamics of that, or what do you anticipate?
It's incredibly important. You know, when you look at the big transformational things that the city has been able to do, it's always been a collaboration and a partnership with a number of stakeholders, including the business community. I'm talking about the transit levy, preschool promise, the banks, 3CDC. That's the kind of relationship and commitment that we need to foster. Look, you know, I've only been in politics for 5 years. 5 years later, I'm mayor. That is a very fast timeline. That's warp speed here in Cincinnati. I've got a lot of relationships that I have to strengthen, a lot of relationships that I have to create, some of which are on 4th Street. But I also have, you know, incredible support in the community as well. As a former Procter & Gamble lawyer, I understand the needs of our large businesses. I understand the potential and the opportunity there. I've already put together a working group during our transition that includes people like Stuart Aiken from Kroger, people like Tim Spence from Fifth Third, and also Michael Fisher, who is one of the chairs of my transition committee. So I take this issue very seriously. I'm looking to be a mayor for the entire city. And in order to do that, we need a strong relationship with our business community.
I thought that sent a great message about you and how you're going to work with them when you put Michael Fisher on your transition team. I thought that was everyone on your transition team, but I'm specifically for business. I thought that was a really strong statement you made.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I appreciate that. It was important to me to build those relationships, to prioritize those relationships. And also, just, you know, that aside, Michael Fisher is an incredible leader with an incredible amount of experience. And I was, frankly, just honored that he would agree to serve.
Is the transition team still in place, basically? When you need something, you can call them and talk things through?
Absolutely. They're more informal advisors at this point. But I'm lucky to have those three people available to me to answer any questions or give me advice on an as-needed basis.
I've had people say to me that, you know, the AFTAB will be somewhere between Mark Mallory and John Cranley with your style. And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, Mark Mallory, very stately and, you know, just really kind of kept things really in order. And you kind of look to him to steady the ship. And John Cranley, very hands-on, very aggressive, and rolls up his sleeves and gets down in some of the nitty-gritties of even things that probably didn't need to get into, but that was his style.
That's an interesting assessment. Okay.
Is that a fair assessment that you'll be somewhere between those two guys, or, you know, what will be your style?
Yeah, you know, the each mayor, makes of the office what they will. I think my style is I don't know if it's in between them, but it'll be uniquely me. I think part of the success that I've had is because I'm not afraid to tell people when I don't know something. I'm collaborative as much as possible. You know, I'm a litigator at heart, so I really enjoy smart people who disagree with me. I think the best way to get to an answer is to get the best two arguments in the room and have them dish it out and see, you know, which argument is left standing. And while that sounds like conflict inducing, what it really means is that I'm looking to listen to as many viewpoints as possible before making big, important decisions. You know, both Mayor Cranley and Mayor Mallory were incredibly successful mayors in different ways. And I hope that I'll be able to chart my own course, but also share in that success. I will say that I'm just incredibly grateful to Mayor Mallory for being a personal and professional mentor to me, to encouraging me to getting in this race in the first place and yeah. helping me along the way. And a really big thank you to Mayor Cranley, who throughout the transition has been just bending over backwards to make sure that it's successful, been very generous with his time and his advice. And I've got to say this, you know, maybe people know this. I didn't. John Cranley is an incredible dinner companion. He and his wife took Whitney and I out for dinner. He tells great stories. He knows which wine to purchase. He makes sure everyone's involved in the conversation. He's if you have a chance to go to dinner with John Cranley, do say yes.
Interesting.
I don't think my invitation's forthcoming. All right, that's taken under advisement.
You know, I want to say this to the listeners, and it's not about me. But
and
I think,
then we have to let him go.
But, no, you're right.
We have committee.
Right? Yeah, you do. Yeah, but I think you handle. And I think it's important that you do this, that for an elected official to handle things. I think you handle criticism very well. And I think you're someone who doesn't let it, you know, get you bogged down and down a rabbit hole that ruins your day or your week or whatever. I think you handle it well.
And I thank you, Jason. Yeah. I really appreciate that. I'm sure you get a fair amount of criticism yourself. So I know, you know, it's not very fun, but it's part of the job, and it's important not to take it seriously. I've learned over the years how to distinguish the wheat from the chaff, so that I'm not ignoring all of it, but that I'm taking, you know, the constructive pieces of it and learning from that and ignoring the more personal attacks. But obviously it's certainly a challenge that goes with the line of the work.
Well, thanks so much for joining us here today. I know I had a few tough questions for you, but hey, you know, like I said, you handle it well, and really appreciate you. You know, we talked about a lot of things here today, and you know, good luck to you, all the best to you as you start this new venture of your career, and we'll be looking forward to keeping up with you.
Thank you so much, Jason. I appreciate the time. Sherry, we'll see you soon.
Thanks, AFTAB.
All right, see you guys.
Bye.
Thanks, AFTAB. Bye-bye. All right, thanks again to AFTAB Purifol for joining us here today. And we'll look forward to following him over the next 4 years. And it should be quite different than the past 8 years, I think, of John Cranley. But we'll see. Sherry, this shifts us into our first That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. It's more of like a moment of 2 weeks ago, but or really moment of the last few weeks, the last month or so, as the Bengals have surged and become really the toast of the town. But you specifically got to experience it.
I did. I went to the Baltimore game. One of my friends had tickets at the last second, and I was like, I will do that. So we went, and we really did it. We went down, we tailgated.
Oh, you did.
We waited in the big, long security line to get into the stadium. And, you know, it happened to be a really nice day, which always helps things. But it was amazing to see how alive the banks were and how just people were reveling and how the banks were being used. The Dora people were really just in the outdoor drinking district, really enjoying that and patronizing the businesses. I mean, how many times have we talked about on the podcast the banks? A lot, right?
Yeah.
But this just was, there was such an energy and in the stadium too. And it is, you know what? We do have a professional football team and they're doing really well and going to the playoffs. And like, it just, it does give the city this extra energy, I feel like.
Yeah, just it was a cool weekend with the Bearcats, unfortunately not winning, but you know, making it and to the playoffs, and then 2 days later the Bengals winning in big time fashion on the last second field goal to make the playoffs for the first time since 2015. And there's just something really special and cool about you know, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Zach Taylor is a young head coach. And there's just, I don't know, like, I'm not an NFL fan. I'm not a Bengals fan. But you find yourself kind of rooting for these guys because they're young and they're fun and they all seem to get along and they just, have rallied together. And that's a tough franchise to, you know, that's had a lot of a bad history and certainly in the last 30 years. Yeah. And it sort of makes you forget about, some of the issues with the bigger issues with that franchise and the stadium issues and all that. So it's pretty fun.
Which is how that is a true Bengals thing. None of that other stuff happened at all.
That's
like,
right.
We're going to the playoffs. Like, forget the rest of it.
Anyway, well, thanks. Thanks so much for listening and listening in 2021 and great support of the podcast. If you missed our New Year's episode, where we now 2 years in a row, we've had influencers from business and politics and media and sports, you know, come on here and give their New Year's resolutions. Go back and check that out in your queue from last week. And we will catch you next week here on That's So Cincinnati.